Welcome back to A Closer Look. I'm Dennis O'Hare.
And I'm Rose Scott. Atlanta native Michelle Malone has been a big part of the city's music scene for more than two decades. She's performed with some of the biggest names, from the members of Sugarland to Indigo Girls.
Malone has a new solo album, Stronger Than You Think, and she's confronting the challenge of reaching audiences old and new. She and percussionist Trish Land came by the WABE studios to talk and play.
When I grow up, I'm gonna be loving my life, living my dream. When I grow up, you're gonna see everybody wanna be just like me.
On this album, Stronger Than You Think, there's a lot of songs about challenges, adversity, really some really blunt stuff, sometimes put into lyrics that say more than one might think at first. The song about the t-shirt where...
They're subtle.
Yeah. It's not about the t-shirt, it's about abuse. Did those songs just come out that way? I mean, or was there an organizing theme for the album when you started?
I didn't have the theme when I started. But shortly thereafter, it became apparent. It seems like in recent years, I've had a lot of friends who are coming up against some pretty serious challenges in their lives with their relationships, health issues, having to care for aging parents. You know, just all these things that we all go through, more or less, but... seems like it's happening more often than not now, a lot of it all at once. And I just wanted to be able to help alleviate some of the pain without getting preachy or getting on a soapbox or getting too specific about what someone might be going through. Really, in general, that's the purpose of music for me, is to make us feel good most of the time. And that was... the real impetus behind this record.
It's about empathy.
Yes and no. I can't empathize with everything that everyone's going through, but I do understand it.
Michelle, have you noticed a change in your approach to your music from when you first started to now?
Oh, God.
You've been doing this for a while. That's a nice way of saying you're a veteran of the industry.
I'm a classic.
I didn't say that.
My approach to music has changed drastically since I started. Of course, when I started, I was still a teenager, and it was really all about me. And look at me, look at me, look at me.
Well, you had your first band when you were, what, 12?
Yes.
So it was supposed to be about you.
Well, my first band, really, I did have it in middle school, so. But, it was very much like, a way for me to get attention early on. And then it became more of a challenge. I felt like I had to prove something. And then it just seems like in recent years it's become more about spreading joy, making people feel good. It's not about me anymore. And that's been really liberating. It's about everyone else. It's about the audience and the listeners. And it makes my job easier.
Maybe ego has been replaced with appreciation somehow. Like, you appreciate your fans and the people who come to hear you and see you buy your records.
Absolutely.
Ain't nobody gonna love me now was the place I was in. Oh, the sun went behind the clouds. I began unraveling. I got down on my knees, looking for salvation. When you came to me, oh, I got an angel. Oh, I got an angel. has gotten through to me somehow.
Did you want to get in the business to make money and be famous and be seen on the Grammys or
No.
Did you just want to play music?
I was more of an accidental tourist. My mother's a singer and a musician, and I grew up in that environment. I did used to go to gigs with my mom and sit at the bar at, I don't know, the Radisson or the Hilton downtown and drink my little Shirley Temple, and I thought that was the coolest job ever. But at the same time, I never really gave it a second thought about myself going into it. And I went to school, and I went to Agnes Scott, and I really wanted to do something else. And then I started playing music out at Little Five Points Pub and the Dugout and Emery Village and all these little places with the Indigo Girls. And one thing led to another. I ended up with a record deal and left college. Then I got to where I loved playing music out, you know. I guess at this point, it's a way of life.
And quite early in your career, really, you got a deal with
Arista
Arista Records and the legendary Clive Davis. You say too early. How come?
Oh, I was so unprepared for life in general, and I was an M-E-S-S. I just had a lot of demons I needed to deal with, you know, and I got to do that in public for the for the next 5 or 10 years, and my pendulum swung way to one side, and then it swung way to the other, and now I'm sort of sitting in the middle with my little pendulum and hanging out. It's a very place
to be. Do you miss the big label stuff at all? I mean, obviously there are pluses and minuses to having, on the one hand, that kind of support, and on the other, probably a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Well, you said it. It's nice to have that amount of support and manpower behind you. And, you know, Trish and I, with one or two other people, handle most everything for my record label and the shows and everything else. So it's a heck of a lot of work. But I don't miss the red tape and the yada yada.
I talked to a lot of artists. Matter of fact, Dion Ferris was one, and she talked about
how, I love her.
Yeah, I love her too. She's cool. How they tried to put her in a box because they really couldn't figure out where to put her, what genre to put her under. Do you define your music, and do you like other people defining your music?
Well, I think it's a necessary evil within the confines of the industry simply because they have to figure out how and where to market you. So in the sense that I am a product, or the music is at least, they have to deal with that. Me personally, I don't think about it. I don't think about music that way at all. I just listen to what is on around me, and I either like it or I don't. And I think the listening public is like that. When we first got iPods and you could shuffle and you just push go, and then you get all kinds of a great mixture coming up, and the industry acts like our feeble brains cannot take it. Oh, my God, what if a blues song comes up next to a country song? What will happen? Your brain will explode. So, no, I like it all. So I don't have a problem with it. I never have. And that's my excuse for not really fitting in any one particular place.
Well, and that's a luxury you have, being in charge of your own music, because you don't have to have an album that's, oh, this is alternative, or this is country, or this is pop, or this is rock, or this is hip-hop, or whatever. So that's a luxury you have.
It is, but I still get told to this day by radio promoters that, oh, well, this record's all over the place. We don't know what type of stations to send it to.
But you have people.
I think if you were creative enough and really took the time, you could figure it out. Because like I said, the public, they like diversity.
Yeah, you have folks with whom you've played, folks in Sugarland, for instance, and even Elton John. I mean, people who have, to one degree or another, made some sort of accommodation with that marketing, big business side of the business. Do you ever think, oh, I wish I had done it the way they did?
Oh, absolutely. Back when I was with Arista, I got a lot of, we'll call it critiquing. I was actually told they needed me to be more like Joan Jett, which doesn't sound that hard. Okay, fine, I'll just write a different type of song. But at the end of the day, it made me very unhappy and uncomfortable, and I'm the one that has to live with me, and I'm the one that has to look in the mirror and deal with that. So I ultimately, it wasn't long after that that I said, look, this is not working for me. You guys are going to kill me. I'm going to end up dying because I'm so miserable. So I quit. And they were probably getting ready to drop me anyway because they were very easy about it. But I understand their position, and I also know myself really well. I am so me. I can't pretend to be anything else because I tried.
Sounds like you're much happier now.
I like me. I'm the best me I know.
Were you recording songs that you didn't like because you were a different Michelle Malone? And did you play those songs at all?
Well, I don't think they were my best songs. I really did try to write what I consider to be more commercial songs back in, I guess it was the early 90s. And they, you know, really wasn't my comfort zone.
One of the folks we had in not too long ago were De La Soul. And their advice, well, it was sort of twofold, if I recall, Rose. One was avoid the big labels. That was one. And another was the whole crowdfunding model. That's what they're doing with the album that they're working on. In that way, are you able to reach people and make them feel more a part of it than they ever have been before?
I think so. I have not personally used Kickstarter itself. I have had independent fundraising efforts, and I called it Kickstart Me Up, because I'm a big Stones fan. So I could sort of gather my troops that way.
And now you're doing the Loud funding?
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard about this. JoinLoud.com. It's a new platform for distributing music digitally. And basically what it is you put the record deal in the hands of the fans. So we are partnering with our fans. They get an exclusive link that they will proliferate on social media, tell their friends about, email, whatever. And when folks decide to buy the record through that particular link, they make money off of it.
It's like a digital version of Amway.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, I don't know, but it seems to be a nice new way to get music out there. And you put it in the hands of the people that already love it, and through word of mouth, they're going to tell their friends about it.
Sure.
Because they love the music already. And they're telling their friends anyways. So why not reward them for that?
Jay-Z just started his own music streaming service, think Tidal, and then you've got all the controversy with record labels and music streaming services and who gets this much and this person's not getting paid. What are your thoughts on all that? Because it seems that it's hard to believe when you hear a record company say, well, we're losing money, you know, and people, and then you hear artists say, well, I'm losing money, and somebody's making some money somewhere.
You know, everyone is always going to take a cut before the musician gets theirs. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way it's always been, for better or for worse. I think we've opened Pandora's box, and there's not a lot we can do to close it at this point. So you just kind of have to suck it up and get creative and take what you can get when you can get it and probably play more live shows. And I play an awful lot of private parties and house concerts, and you know, my fans are the best, and if it weren't for them with house concerts and supporting me all these years with the Kickstart Me Ups and things, I don't know how I'd continue to do this.
Well, and you fans always want to hear the classics, fans want to hear, you know, the most popular, and Could you imagine doing a show and not playing the songs that people want to hear? I mean, it's like asking Gladys Knight not to sing Midnight Train to Georgia, you know?
I mean, for better or for worse, I do not have songs that are that popular. A lot of folks are still learning about me this far into my career, which is wonderful and fascinating.
Well, every now and then you'll get a request for a Big Black Bag from Craggy River Day.
Yeah.
So would you play it? Because I don't
like it. Really? By the record.
Are you serious?
Why not?
For Big Black Bag?
Why not?
Holy moly.
You don't have to.
No. I want to. All right, Big Black Bag. Let's see.
His eyes were the color of his car. Well, I'm two in car wheels in the yard. Today I can't go too far, 'cause I got a hand in the big black bag.
As you look to the future, you have all these fans that have come with you. When you're putting new stuff together, are you ever thinking in the back of your head, oh, maybe they won't buy this one? Maybe they won't come along with me on this journey?
I don't think about it when I'm writing and recording. I think about it later. Before, there's this great grace period where you've recorded your record and it's not out yet. And you have dreams and aspirations for your record. And this is the best time because anything can happen. So you just hope for the best. And hopefully people can connect with the music I write nowadays. And that's really my goal, is to write things that everyone can relate to.
Final question is, if you could tell the 20-year-old Michelle Malone something, what would it be?
Shut up.
And on that note, Michelle Malone, Trish Mann, thanks for dropping by. We appreciate it.
I pray that on my soul.